This is Building Bridges with Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
Demonstrators representing New York's black and brown transgender community protested racial injustice after the death of George Floyd, who died after a Minneapolis police officer knelt on his neck for nearly 9 minutes. A crowd shouting, "Black Trans Lives Matter," marched and blocked traffic on the major traffic artery of Greenwich Village, and then rallied in front of the historic Stonewall Inn. Demonstrators carried signs showing faces of transgender people who had been killed by police or were murdered by white supremacist bigots. Each activist spoke to the harm of erasing transgender voices. The signs pointed out the unending rash of violence against trans individuals, particularly transgender women of color, citing the names of the dozens of trans people who have been murdered already this year: Dustin Parker, Nolisa Luciana Ruiz, Yampin Mendez Arocho, Monica Diamond, Lexi Joanna Metzger, Serena Angelique Velasquez Ramos, Penelope Diaz Ramos, Nina Pop, Ellie J. O'Regan, and Tony McDade. The protesters rallied at Stonewall to commemorate June as Pride Month, and because it was there they resisted police harassment and brutality, with such violence being common and expected. The Stonewall Rebellion was a breakthrough moment when then, as of now, protesters refuse to accept humiliation and fear as the price of living fully, freely, and authentically. Say their name.
Lots of people are converging around Stonewall. We are in front of Stonewall now. And I wonder if we can talk to folks from... Hello! Well, I couldn't think of anything better. Who are you?
My name is Mariah Lopez. I'm the executive director of the nation's oldest trans rights group, STAR.
I've been in demonstration of the police.
It's 7 o'clock.
And so
Woo!
On.
Sorry.
No, do that and then we'll...
No, go ahead. They're doing it. I join in. I added a hoop. I think it's good ambient noise for the interview.
It's fabulous ambient noise. Tell us about the correlation between the oppression and the violence that trans people face, LGBTQIA people.
Well, first of all, I think you just said it. The biggest connection I find is that if you look around most demos, it is queer people that are doing the organization. This is the story of civil rights in this country. From Bayard Rustin to Marsha P. Johnson, within George Floyd's sort of movement, we have seen queer people rise up, but we have not seen the nation rise up for the issues of trans and queer people the same. All my organization, which was founded by a black and Puerto Rican trans person, all we want right now is for this momentum to continue and for the movement to double back on the issues of trans people. I run an organization founded by a trans person that in 1971 stood in Washington Square and demanded that we reform prisons for trans people. New York State prisons are still not reformed. So there is a connection to why we are out in these streets, fed up across the entire system. I've been beaten up personally. There are nexuses between all of us, and we're here hoping that the momentum continues.
Now, I'm doing more than saying momentum continue. I'm elevating you, even though I'm not so fond of electoral politics. But I'm placing you. You're the mayor. The hell with this Mayor de Blasio. The hell with the curfew as his only really concerted response to anything. So tell me about the systemic things that you think must happen to protect Black Lives Matter, to protect trans people, to...
So every trans...
And I have to add, to root out and deal with white supremacy, which is at the core of all our institutions.
So if I was the mayor, I'd be forced to, at least for ironic effect, bring up some old adages of the mayor. And one of those are broken windows. I'd turn that on its head. The concept behind broken windows is that if you catch things small, it has less of a collateral effect, and you nip it in the bud, so to speak. The summons for the urinating on the corner or the broken window in the neighborhood being addressed. If the system, the police state we live in, focused on the false log entry of the officer working an overnight on a Saturday that reflects a meal time when he didn't have it, or goes hard on the officer that observes an excessive use of force but lies about it as well, will fix the system. Any leader of the city, political leader, community leader, is going to need to ask for a humongous shift in the culture of law enforcement here. The history of law enforcement in this city being almost out of control dates back before Five Points. This city has built a police state or system that is meant to oppress poor people. But within that system, and within sort of the labor rights movement that got us these unions, we've lost sight of the fact that this police department and all police are supposed to serve the people. So lock up the crooked cops, turning broken windows within would be a good place to start.
Actually, wouldn't it be a better place to get rid of broken windows as an ideology?
As an idea, unless we're locking up crooked cops, absolutely.
Thanks. And let me ask you, I can't, you know, there's a special feeling every time I pass by Stonewall. The significance of the protest being in front of Stonewall.
If you look at historical footage, it wasn't until 1970 that the trans rights movement, within the context of Gay Activist Alliance and Daughters of Bilitis and the larger movement, 1970 is really when stuff popped off. Well, we celebrated because Heritage of Pride said so, World Pride last year. I find repetition of history and fate to see star in the streets 50 years, five decades to the year, the Pride Month from Stonewall. And so I think, you know, there'll always be significance in this place. And so the fact that we will be in these streets when the momentum of pride is behind us is telling, and I think it's a bit faithful.
And are you going to breach the curfew, or you're going to be obedient tonight?
Can't tell you that.
Oh,
I'd have to take you with
but
us.
Do you, hey, I don't mind being napped at all. Yeah. And tell us again who you are.
My name is Mariah Lopez. Around the curfew, though, I will be specific and say I am going to be audacious and suggest that because the curfew was enacted because partially a concern of vandalism, there isn't much private property to be destroyed on the pier. And in full star fashion, I will be encouraging people to take up space. The pier has enough space for people to socially distance. It'll be warm for the next few days. It would be an amazing thing if, like Occupy Zuccotti, and Occupy Wall Street, the movement could shift to the west side of the village and occupy this huge space that was initially christened by two black trans pioneers.
And there is one other piece there. There's a poster that's painful to look at. And I'm looking at the Rest in Power. And why don't you lift up those posters that are there and the people are on there and talk about them so that we can say their names?
No, thank you. Sure.
So we're actually looking at Lailene Polanco, Jazlene Ware, Jamigo, Jamar Berryman, and Nina Pop. So tell us about the...
And Mr. McCade, Tony McCade, is here as well.
Absolutely. I missed that. Yeah.
Although these three ladies, Ms. Jamar Berryman, Ms. Polanco, and Ms. Ware, are worthy of us saying their names, I think a lot, and I'd be remiss and unfaithful to my base community if I didn't say this. My community right now, the trans community across the world and country, are concerned, and this is exactly why I made this sweatshirt. This is exactly the reason. We are concerned that this movement is not in the streets when trans people of color are killed by the police or by acts of violence. And Mr. McCade died in police by the hand of the police not long ago, days ago in Measure, and Ms. Pop was murdered weeks ago by an act of violence. They weren't killed by the same system or thing, but the people rising up could elevate their stories, could help the momentum of communities, brown communities, trying to heal from this. We just ask that Mr. McCade and Ms. Pop and all of the other ladies are not forgotten. We know that the organic nature of how people have responded to George Floyd have meant that lots of intersecting movements have come forward. Many of them have never heard of trans issues. I'll stand next to sometimes and I have cis passing privilege. Some people may not know standing next to me in front of a police line that I'm trans. Right now is the time that that should not matter and that it also should. We ask that people understand that we need to uplift the story of Mr. McCade to demand justice and a transparent investigation in his case too. Why was he gunned down? We demand answers. We demand change within our own people of color communities to stop violence like the violence that killed Ms. Pop. But we can only do it if we remain united as we've been in the streets for the last several weeks.
Okay, you've got a great sweatshirt there. Tell us what it says.
So on the front, it has Star since 1969. And on the back are bullets that I wanted people to be aware of, even if they saw me in passing later in the street or on some other day. Stand with trans women, TGNC people of color, you know, be in these streets with us even when this is over. Defund the cops. This sort of speaks to George Floyd. It's self-explanatory. Stand with sex workers. Mostly every trans person being elevated in history for doing work over the last 5 decades were sex workers. And sex work is equivalent in what is happening between two adults as is a sexual orientation, right? So regulating two adults that are male having sex because they're gay, or regulating two adults because one is a sex worker and one isn't, that's wrong. So because we're celebrating Pride, I just want to bring everybody, it may be a little complicated to wrap your mind around, but again, the reason why the police kicked in the door behind me was because the state was trying to regulate people's sexual activities. That should never happen. So I asked people to stand with sex workers. And lastly, defund Pride, or the corporate structure that is Pride. Pride was robbed from people of color and trans people in terms of the business it's become. It is a $88 billion industry globally now, or at least in the U.S. That amount of money that stems from brown labor that comes from corporations that got their wealth from brown labor and indigenous displacement and genocide, that money that flows all around here, that's blood money. And at least because that money is called on to help us all celebrate Pride, we ask that people of color control what Pride looks like. And so for that to happen, we need to dismantle Pride. That's what the t-shirt says.
What do you think?
Right on.
Thank you. Really? Okay, I think you can see what folks said. So here we have another group that's marching in now with an extremely beautiful sign. And we're going to try to figure out what the major message is. So hold on. Let's see if I can catch up.
Health issue.
Hold it.
Public health issue.
Racism is a public health issue.
Racism is a public health issue.
Okay, now you've got, string it out. Let's see. What my friend here is saying is that white people have a hell of a responsibility because we're the ones who perpetrate the violence. Right on, absolutely. The sign says, employ, uplift, black, trans, women, house, love, stop killing. So tell us more about that.
So we are Black Trans Media. We're amazing Black Trans Everything people. We are essential workers because we are calling racism a public health issue. So let's get that framing start straight. The first thing it says, employ, uplift, house, love, stop killing black trans women. And it doesn't end there. Black trans people, black trans men, stop talking about the violences and the rage that we are showing, right? Talk about the conditions that lead us to these places. Let's talk about how we don't have access to resources. Let's talk about how people like you are perpetrating the violence by telling your families that we are unsafe. How do you start leveraging your own white privilege, your white tears, for black trans bodies? How are you leveraging your networks for our black trans bodies? Yes, in addition to that, on this curfew in New York City at 8 p.m., who are the people that are going to suffer? The most vulnerable people, the people that don't have access to a place to go, a corner to hide in. We are under attack. This curfew is a curfew on blackness.
That's heavy. That's heavy. It's a virtual poetic essay against white supremacy. And you're educated.
Transphobia's got to go. Hey, hey, ho, ho. 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 Transphobia's got to go.
We'll see. I mean, if you Google my name, that I have my own bona fides to talk about healthcare. I am the reason that Medicaid pays for sex changes for trans people.
Now, I want to hear about that.
The case was called Lopez v. Mattingly. And when I was 19 or 20, my lawyers, when I was in foster care, I have two other landmark cases. You'll look it up if you Google me.
Well, I'm a lawyer. That's easy enough.
Oh, good. Well, no, actually, the first case was filed by Paul Weiss. It was called Joel A. V. Giuliani. It changed all of foster care for queer kids. It created all of the beds for queer kids. Joel A. V. Giuliani, filed in 99. Settled. If you're a lawyer, you'll get it. It's in Southern District. The second case that was landmark was Jean Doe v. Bell, Article 78 against ACS when I was 17 because they wouldn't let me dress in female clothing. The state Supreme Court ruled that trans people were covered under the state human rights law. Until Cuomo signed GENDA, my case, Jean Doe, was the only reason trans people had protection under the human rights law for decades. So the last case, this is the one I started this conversation about, was Lopez v. Mattingly. And that case challenged ACS's refusal to cover my surgery when a doctor said I needed it. But here's how it changed Medicaid. The stupid city relied on... No, but they're the best! Tina Wongo, yes, here you go. Tina Wongo, Erwin Shaw, the best people in the world. Special Lit, Judy Waxberg, Judy Stern, those are my peoples.
I'm convinced, yes.
So the last case, and they were like, Bush was in office still. This is a long time ago. And they were like, well, the federal government excludes trans coverage on a federal level in Medicaid language, so it should be good enough as a regulation. And Judge Sheldon and Rand in court told them to pay for my surgery. Now, there's appeal stuff there, but it shattered the ceiling. Medicaid no longer could claim that the surgery was experimental and risky, which was the important thing. Medicaid changed years later.
What do you see as where we, as a collective, go from here to deal with the profundity and pain of these issues that have brought countless numbers of people across the country to the streets?
What really needs to happen for us to go forward is to organize and educate, but also to go within and, like, know, like, I am a person of color. I am brown. I'm Indian. And I was born and raised in America, and I was born thinking I was American, and I realized at some point in my life that everyone perceived me as Indian and different, and just like having that, you were putting up these barriers, and how you can release them is, you know, what we're going to do to get through this.
Did you ride over from Brooklyn?
Of course, yeah, definitely. We did the protest in Brooklyn, you know, on Saturday.
Yeah, I want you to tell me a little bit about your thoughts about the real perpetrators of violence, if you will.
I mean, you can see it. Like, the nation's coming forth with all the evidence. The bricks dropped on sides of the streets, you know. Like, we are being baited. We are being framed for the violence that is happening. There are videos coming out of cops doing this after they're clearing out protests, just bashing in windows. And people need to know, like, we are out here to be peaceful and share the love and heal the hurt that seems inconceivable to heal.
Who are you?
My name is Shreya Mehta.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you all. Stay safe. And thank you for being out here.
Curfew may not mean a restaurant closes for
Can I grab a for interviews?
I'm Nicole Bowles. I'm I came out here basically because I was here to speak. I was here to speak on the behalf of the trans women and men that lives were lost. Of course, their lives will be going under the, it's like going under the bridge because there's so much else going on that people are not talking about and people are not mentioning. This is happening to us every day. I'm sorry to George Floyd and his family, but us as black trans people, we experience this abuse, and this is our narrative that we are forced to live with every single day. And so I wanted to be here because this is history. I wanted to be here to share my thoughts and feelings about what I think and believe that has been going on in our community. I think the police needs to be defunded. I think sex work needs to be decriminalized. I think that we need to be given the opportunity to grow in our authentic self. And we're not allowed to do that. And so everything we're doing is either illegal, unfortunate, or not right. You know, we can't do our own work. So a lot of girls do sex work. And so for meeting our own needs, paying our own bills, for doing what we have to do, we're going to jail. And the cops take it and they run with it. And they use that opportunity to abuse us and to treat us bad. And so I needed to be here to speak my... So the curfew is a hindrance right now for what we're trying to go on. See, we're out here trying to do something positive. We're protesting peace and justice on both sides. And so now we have to be caught up in a curfew and penalized depending on what the situation is. I'm going to be on my way home. So that means I can be penalized on my way home from coming from a protest that was doing something positive and making awareness to our community. Right.
You're empowered now. Right. What do we have to know? What do we have to understand? And how do we have to address what's happening to the black trans community?
First of all, we have to address the needs that are happening. We have to be able to supply and understand and make room for the needs. For example, there's a lot of girls that does sex work. This curfew also penalized so many black trans women of color and doing what they're doing and giving themselves what they need as far as maybe they have to be out in the streets doing work. Maybe there are the ones that are doing essential work. There's a lot of things that are happening that this kind of stuff makes it even worse for us. Them having this curfew puts us as black trans women in a very bad situation. How does it help us and what is it giving our community? We need to figure out the needs as far as jobs and housing. And
what about health care?
Definitely health care. Health care is really an issue in having in our lives, but a lot of us don't have that either. And so you have to be positive sometime to have good health care. So there's trans women out here who's trying to do and make it the best way they know how. And so I think the governor, the mayor, and people who wants to address these needs need to understand the needs of us black trans women and help us make this happen, however it needs, by understanding that we need health care, jobs, we need housing, we need mental health. It's huge in our community. And a lot of things that are going on now is kind of stopping that, and it's hindering us to get into that place.
Thank you so much for being so candid, so passionate. The hell with the damn curfew, but nevertheless, be careful. Excuse me, I'm taken by the "we can't breathe." You put it plural. Mm-hmm. Who can't breathe, and why did you choose that slogan?
I think America can't breathe, quite frankly. This is about our own collective constriction. It's not about just George Floyd. It's not just about Atiana Jefferson. It's not just about Trayvon Martin. It's about our own systemic failures that have been going on since this country was founded. Like, our power, our wealth was built on the backs of slaves. We have some very hard truths that we need to acknowledge before we can ever really fix it. As a white man, I can certainly sit here and acknowledge that it's been very, very convenient for me as a white man of privilege, sort of gloss over, you know, what has allowed my life to be so successful. It's been very easy for so many of my peers to not have these conversations. I think we're all suffering a collective bout of asthma right now, and our airways are so obstructed. The only thing that is going to free up our ability to breathe is to open the airways, have these conversations, acknowledge the hard truths once and for all, and acknowledge the systemic failures that have led us to this point.
And how that discourse, how that conversation opens up, and how the reality of white privilege and white supremacy as a bedrock foundation to the harm to black lives, to brown lives, to LGBTQIA lives, to class in this society, and the working class life. Oh, how would on. You say?
Hey, Annie. Yeah, I come from the Ozarks, you know, and the rhetoric there is quite different than the rhetoric among, you know, white people here. You know, you can see very clearly the majority of the people that just marched down the street were not black. Like, you know, there were many white people that, you know, that believe in messages, you know, like these, and they get it. And I'm on my way now to meet my black boyfriend, you know, and we have these very open conversations all the time. But it also has to start with not just the willingness to have the conversation, but the willingness to acknowledge that we all in some way, whether it's active or passive, we're all accountable. It's not just, you know, the four officers in Minneapolis that led to this moment. We all contribute to this society in some way, whether we just walk past some injustice that we see, whether we tolerate a crude joke that has like racist undertones, whether we see, you know, glass ceilings continue to be erected in our places of work. We all contribute to the lack of parity in our societies. And the time to have these conversations is long past. And I think we are at a critical inflection point. I mean, it's sad that another man had to die, but I hope that now real change is gonna happen. And, you know, the quick firing of those four officers, that was almost a watershed moment, because that's something that we haven't really seen before. And the fact that charges were filed against a police officer this quickly, that brings me hope. So.
And one last question, and I'll walk. The question also of the trans community, the question of the LGBTQIA community, and the hurt from the dominant society that they have experienced, and the trans community, just unquestionably, the brutality is rampant from the policing authorities, etc. And do you think that there should be more built in about the messaging of that community of people as part of these protests?
100%. And, you know, it shouldn't take the death of a trans woman of color. I mean, the disparity between, you know, in that community is just completely unacceptable. The police forces, you know, and the government that funds them should be much more proactive in making sure that, you know, police officers have the language. They have the sensibilities to engage those communities, to be able to speak with them, and actually maybe have a little bit of ability to look through the lens that they look through. Because if they don't, you're going to continue to see these conflicts, and unfortunately, you're going to continue to see, you know, aggression, you know, between police officers and between these communities. And I haven't been very encouraged that things are going to get any better anytime soon, and I hope to see it.
And my friend, you are?
My name is Jason.
And from the Ozarks. And
well, I live here now.
You've been listening to Say Their Name.
This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.